It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host, here on WGN Radio. And happy Memorial Day weekend to you. I hope that wherever you are, you will make the most of it, and certainly we have some opportunities we didn't have just last week to be outside. And I thought I would start off with a little bit of, well, maybe a little bit of sarcasm. Everyone's mood, depending on the weather and what you're able to do or not able to do, is maybe a little bit down. But this will lighten you up when it comes to the category of the federal government couldn't possibly do anything more silly than this. You may recall, earlier this year, I talked about the effort by the Department of Interior to have a hunting scene depicted on the federal duck stamp. Since it was started in 1935 by Ding Darling, caught in the stamp cost a dollar versus the 25 now, the scene has always been about birds. The only dog ever on a duck stamp was King Buck, the famous retriever out of Olin Kennels. Other than that, it's always been birds. Well, the previous Secretary of Interior, Ryan Zinke, who, as many of you know, left for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was the charge of self-dealing, he came up with the idea that we ought to have a hunting scene on the federal duck stamp, because after all, that would support hunting and show that the people who buy duck stamps are hunters. Lots and lots of people said, no, including myself, said, no, that's a terrible idea. What we want to do is we want to broaden the reach of the federal duck stamp program so that lots of people will buy duck stamps, even if they don't go hunting. And one of the things that I have been a proponent of for a long time, as have some others, is that if you go to a national wildlife refuge to watch birds, you should have a duck stamp. The birds are there at the national wildlife refuge because that refuge was paid for primarily by duck hunters who bought duck stamps. In fact, there is no more effective program in the history of conservation anywhere in the world than the federal duck stamp program, where 98 cents on every dollar goes to acquiring habitat or acquiring easements, and the entire National Wildlife Refuge system across America is supported by the duck stamp program. So the more people that can support it, the better. But no, the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Interior were determined that we are going to have a hunting scene on the duck stamp. So when Secretary Zinke departed and Secretary Bernhard came in, I thought maybe we'll have a change of mind. A number of people weighed in, and their comments were along these lines. Waterfowl hunters are the epitome of conservationists, and their purchase of duck stamps has enabled the conservation of millions of acres of wildlife habitat. But we need to expand the duck stamp program, as I mentioned a moment ago, to include all people who like birds, so they will have a reason to buy the duck stamp. Well, last week, in the midst of everything that's going on in the world, buried in a release out of the Fish and Wildlife Service was, we will have a hunting scene on the duck stamp going forward, starting this year. Here's the irony, and the reason I said I'm going to start off with a bit of sarcasm. The chosen bird to be on the duck stamp this year is a red-breasted merganser. So anyone painting a duck stamp scene to be selected to be the winner of the federal duck stamp program has to paint a red-breasted merganser. I was brought up at a very early age not to shoot ducks that have teeth. I'm sure all of you listening who are duck hunters have never intentionally shot a red-breasted merganser. They are not a species that duck hunters shoot. So the challenge for this year's artists, and again, my sarcasm will now be extreme, the challenge for this year's artists is you are going to have to paint a scene, a hunting scene, of red-breasted mergansers coming to the decoys, or a dog retrieving one. And by the way, a dog will hardly ever retrieve a merganser. It's a little bit like a cormorant. They smell like fish. Dogs don't like them. I have a personal experience with accidentally once having shot a common merganser. My lab went out to get it, got right up to it, turned around, and came back. It was the only duck in his entire life that he refused to bring back to me. So wildlife artists across America, you're going to really have to use your imagination this year. And I can't wait to see what the Fish and Wildlife Service and the judges of the duck stamp program select as the winning painting to be on this year's federal duck stamp of a red-breasted merganser. Maybe it'll be, maybe it'll be mallards coming to the decoys with a red-breasted merganser swimming in the decoys. I have no idea. But I do find it incredibly ironic that those who were just so driven to get a duck hunting scene on the federal duck stamp program because it would ensure that we promoted hunting picked the year to inaugurate this with a duck that nobody hunts. So that's part of what's going on in the wonderful world in Washington. I thought I would just talk for a moment about the rule book that you need to have to go outdoors if you're in Illinois. And last week, I had a wonderful conversation with Doug Nelson of Wolf River Resorts, who's been a great friend of mine and the show's for so many years. And the slogan for Wisconsin has been, his tourism slogan for as long as any of us can remember, has been, escape to Wisconsin. Well, what we're doing is we're fleeing Illinois to go to Wisconsin, where we actually can do things in the outdoors. And the city of Chicago, as those of you living in the city of Chicago know, you still remain in basically total lockdown when it comes to being able to use the outdoors. And I'm going to ask Mayor Lightfoot and her staff if they have ever heard of Daniel Burnham, or if they have heard of the Burnham Plan, which said the city's lakefront and our parks belong to the people. I think it's increasingly, and I'm not obviously not a doctor, and it's not medical advice in any way I'm giving it here, but it has increasingly become apparent that if people can get outside, they can release their anxiety, they can release their stress. And as I understand the mayor's position, she doesn't want individuals to go to the lakefront because we will crowd together. We can't run on the lakefront. Has the mayor of Chicago been on the streets of Chicago to see what's going on? The streets, the sidewalks are so crowded with people running and biking and walking because they can't get to our parks and they can't get to the lakefront that the sidewalks are actually a dangerous place to be. And this is not an exaggeration. There was actually a lady in a walker walking down the street with her walker because she couldn't safely walk on the sidewalk. There is an enormous pent-up demand for people to get outside. And as the weather improves, whether it's raining or not, it's warm, we are going to bust outside. I'm not saying in an anarchy way. I just mean people are going to be, you can't keep us inside. Our lakefront is 12, 14 miles long. Let people run on the lakefront. Let people walk on the lakefront. If the whole issue is we don't want them to congregate, well, that's pretty easy. Just keep moving. But the sidewalks of Chicago are very crowded right now. So if there is any thought about social distancing, Mayor Lightfoot, just go outside and see what's going on. There is no social distancing going on in many neighborhoods of Chicago with people trying to just walk, jog, ride a bike. Just get outside. We need more room. And as Daniel Burnham said, our lakefront and our parks belong to the people. We are adults. We can figure this out. Just give us the opportunity to get outside. And I know I'm speaking for just literally tens of thousands of fishermen when I say this. The Chicago lakefront has been a generational place for families to go and fish, whether it was smelt, whatever, whether it was salmon, trout, now smallmouth bass. These families that go to fish are probably living together. So why can't we go to the lakefront and fish together? I don't understand this, but I do know that the Department of Natural Resources and other entities are going to be hemorrhaging money. And this is not about money, but they're going to be hemorrhaging participation. And instead, the fishermen of Illinois are fleeing to Wisconsin and other places where they can fish. It's not as though we're not going fishing. So for the, I guess, the sanity of those of us who love the lakefront in Chicago, I'm not saying things that haven't been said before. Please let us use it. Let us use it in a wise way. We cannot be locked to the city streets. It's just not something that is going to further, I think, the whole ability to realize that one of the great reasons we live in Chicago is we have this amazing lakefront and we have these amazing parks. And we can safely social distance. I very much hope this week we'll be able to begin to use our parks and our lakefront. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. And when I do, I'll have a bit of a discussion as to what's going on in Alaska and Canada, and also what's happened to the surveys of the Fish and Wildlife Service. I thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I'm going to start off this segment talking about sometimes how bureaucracy just gets in the way of getting things done. The Hunter Ed program, which is largely online in most states now, due to the efforts of an organization called, in Illinois particularly, called the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation, which worked with the previous director to get Hunter Ed online, now faces a dilemma across America. You cannot go hunting in most states if you do not have a hunter education certificate. And you cannot get a hunter education certificate in most states unless you appear in person for a final instruction class and test. This is a problem. There are no instruction classes and there are no tests right now that I'm aware of in the lower 48. So, if you want to go hunting this fall, you need your hunter education certificate if you've never had a hunting license before, or if you plan to hunt, if you're out of the apprentice program and you plan to hunt on your own. You can't get it. You can go online, you can do everything, but you can't get the certificate. So I'm hoping that the Illinois Department of Natural Resources and Director Callahan, along with other states, will figure out a way to wave a wand, do whatever they need to do to say it's high time that the hunter education course was completely online. And if you pass the course, you should be able to get the certificate. Many Western states are really restrictive, and they would still require hours and hours of in-person, physical in-person instruction with a firearm. As we said often, these hunter education courses are not about hunter education. They're really gun safety courses, And hunter education is just the term that's being used. But if you went through a hunter education course online or before it was online in person, you wouldn't know much about hunting. Yes, you would know more than you started with, but you would not consider your, I would not consider you qualified to go hunting. What I would consider you is knowledgeable enough on firearms that you understand the basics. But that does not make you a safe hunter, and it doesn't mean that you know enough about hunting to have any success. So why do we require in person? If this COVID lockdown continues, there won't be a single person in America who's able to get a hunter education certificate this fall. And before COVID began, I was talking about how the states are absolutely screaming because of the decline in revenues coming from Pittman-Robertson funds, because now their biggest source of revenue was plunging. Without new hunters and people getting hunter education, what's going to happen to the revenue and what's going to happen to the heritage of hunting? However, in the ironic twist, and I guess I'll stay with irony, as I've mentioned, gun sales have absolutely gone through the roof. They are up for the month of April, 68% increase, 1,678,223 guns were sold in America in the month of April. 68% increase. So all of a sudden, the Pittman-Robertson funds, which have been in straight nosedive since President Trump was elected, have done an immediate reversal, and in 1 month, more than doubled. So for the states, there could be a little bit of a silver lining to COVID. They're going to get more money from gun sales. I'm not going to talk on this show about the motivation of gun buyers, et cetera, except I will offer this. It appears that the overwhelming number of people buying guns are people who have never owned a gun before. That's a fairly sobering thought. One would like to think that people buying firearms know how to use them. What we're seeing is a rush to buy firearms from people, they may know how to use them, but they've never owned one before. So on one hand, we are going to see a really a dangerous collapse in the recruitment of new hunters, and this whole idea of the 3R program that the federal government has, recruit, you know, reactivate, program, retain. You can't recruit if you can't get a hunter education certificate. So I do hope that the state of Illinois and all the states in the country look at this as an opportunity, which so many in the private sector are doing, to figure out a better way and to say, let's get hunter ed entirely online, or as I said a moment ago, there must be some pen that can be used somewhere to say, at this year, at this time, hunter education is suspended or whatever it is, so people can go hunting this fall. Before I sign off, in about the next minute, I do want to say that we are seeing a very interesting development in the survey world, which I've talked briefly about, and that is basically all surveys of wildlife have been canceled. The waterfowl survey, which started in 1955 for the first time in history, canceled. We don't have surveys of drumming grouse, whether it be in Wisconsin or sage grouse in the American West. We don't have surveys of anything going on, deer, fish. The whole thing is shut down. This offers us an opportunity to figure out a better way. There's always a better way to do something. We should find it. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.